The closing market report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123, or email to cooley@admworld.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's May the 16th, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing in Normal, Illinois. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Well, in agricultural news, the ag spending bill should make it to the House floor this week. On the Senate side, the bill is still in committee. Japan says it wants its own inspectors in U.S. meatpacking plants, and Washington is expected to say okay. And the state of Missouri has passed, but not signed into law, a bill that would require all gas in that state contain 10% ethanol. Ah, there is one caveat. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories later in this half hour. Also today, we'll hear from University of Illinois Extension entomologist Kevin Steffi. He has some important information on fighting the beanleaf beetle, or maybe more importantly, not fighting the beanleaf beetle. Hey, and don't forget, at the bottom of the hour, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast. It all comes up on this Monday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Chicago, on this Monday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby wheat July contract at 399.5. It was down 2 for the day. September futures at 411.75, down a penny and 3/4. July wheat, 480.25, down 1 for the day. July corn in Chicago, 260, a penny and 3/4 higher. September's at 270.5, up 2. December contract at 283.75, up 2. And the March at 293.25, up 2.25. July soybeans at 604.5. They were down 8.5 cents. August at 610.75, down 8.75, and September's at 616. We're off 7.25 for the day. November beans down 6.25 at 625.75. Bean meal futures 177.40, down 40 in the July contract. July bean oil at 25.49, down 70. Feeder cattle from the mercantile exchange, $103.05. They were up 65 cents. Live cattle June contract 77.85, were up 45 for the day. Lean hogs finished the June contract at $66.60 at the Merck, and they were off 52.5 cents on this afternoon for a Monday. Crude oil futures June contract $69.40, off 2.64. The CRB at 352.06, down 9.69, and the dollar at 84.50 at this hour, down 0.59. The Dow Jones Industrial Average 11,382 points, and they're down just about even at this hour in New York. In just a moment, Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing in Normal, Illinois, will join us to take a look at what's happening in Chicago and around the globe.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Kurt now on the line with us. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about this drop in the bean market. What happened there?
Well, basically, it was partly due to the USDA reports on Friday and also the outside markets, such as the energies and metals. Crude oil is down over $2.63 a barrel, gasoline down 12 cents a gallon. In the metal side, gold over $26 an ounce, silver 30 cents an ounce. The copper, which was sort of the legs underneath the metals for over the last 2 years, sort of seeing a correction. The fear or concern was the higher commodity prices could slow the economic growth here for a while. But it's probably more than anything just good old-fashioned long liquidation. It is going to look kind of nasty on the charts because the markets did come in and record some 26-year highs in the gold market overnight and sort of fell back from last week's highs there, so we're due for a correction with the overbought stats. But that sort of spilled over the beans. And also, too, we looked at the USDA reports there Friday, even though the carryout was unchanged and the new crop carryout was a little lower than what the trade expected, 650 million bushel, that still signifies we have plenty of beans around. That's the highest carryout in history, and I can't really believe that's bullish whatsoever.
But if you look at the markets, technically the beans, while they gap lower today, really haven't done what appears to be a lot of damage, at least on this one day worth of trade, still above the 20, 50, and 100-day average on the lead, and I think also on the on the harvest month, too. So the November, still technically above that. And it appears that they really haven't even broken any uptrend lines to the downside at this point.
No, if you draw your trend lines, they're still intact. If you're a trader, a technician, you should be long the market. The trend is up and it points higher. We could be carving out sort of a head and shoulders bottom here. We can come up here and take out last week's highs there, and we could probably be in a position to run the market for a while. Short term, we're in a situation where the last 2 weeks is 620s held support in the Novembers, and $6 is held here in the July. So as long as we stay above that, the funds are probably going to support their position here over time. The key is probably get a little further in growing season here, watch the demand, and above all, watch these outside markets.
Then take a look at the corn chart for me and tell me about that, because it's starting to form some pretty interesting runs up. Especially on the nearby, if you take a look at that, we've got two gap higher, one on Friday, one again today, and it sure looks like a spike to the upside with, a last at 260 today, a high of 260.5, and the lead option continuous corn chart. Is this just a last gap to the upside, or we've got more to go?
Well, if you go clear back to last December, it seems like this corn market takes a surge, pulls back, gaps, and goes. We did that first of December. We did that at the end of January there. We did it on the March Planning Intentions Report, and we did it last week here. So it feels like maybe if we follow suit in here, the corn market could sort of back and fill and try to fill the daily chart gaps here that we left here right after Friday's report. And if it follows suit, we'll probably hang in here until next month and see what the next round of USDA numbers say. But when you go back to sort of day one, the market had objectives about every 10 cents higher, especially in the December futures here. Originally, we had an objective of 245 obtained at pullback. Had objective of 255 pullback, 265 pullback, 275 sort of pullback. Now we're 285. If this follows suit, the next technical objective that the technicians feel we could reach is probably 295. In order to reach that, we need to see some more fundamental reason to give the funds reason to add to their already record long position.
And if you go back, the last time we were up this high was when July of 04, looks to me like, would have been on the lead option charts, at least, would have been the last time that we were up this high in the December contracts. So this was quite some time ago. Does it represent a place that you'd like to add a scale-in sale for corn?
I believe so. Our target, our last target here was 285. We reached it as a producer. We're officially 50% sold on new crop expectations. We're going to continue to stick to our plan we formulated last winter to scale up sales as we go in through here. As a producer on this crop we're putting in the ground, I think it warrants to stay on top of this because the outside markets sort of give up, or the funds give up. This market has considerable downside risk. A basic example of that, if you look at where the futures is and where the cash is, there's huge divergence there. And what I mean by that, a very wide basis, mm-hmm. which suggests that the underlying fundamentals are still weak in the cash market. Also, too, you've got quite a bit of optimism built into the deferreds already. You're looking at 2007 corn at 311, the 2008 December corn already 324. And that's going to signal we're going to buy quite a few corn acres. Then lastly, too, on that note, if you look at the options out into the 2007 area. The December 2007 $4 corn call is 16 cents. Now, that's awful bullish, $4 corn calls at 16 cents.
How do farmers take advantage of all those deferred things? Put storage up and store 2 years' worth of crop?
Well, I suggest that continue the old theme song that we've been singing here, Sell the Carry. You know, basically, when you look at those markets out that far, it does suggest, like you mentioned, to store and hang on to it. It's going to be awful hard to get basis to work, you know, until we get more down the road, because basically what we're seeing is the funds are the ones buying the futures. They're not coming in buying the cash market at the present time. At some point in time, the basis would narrow, and that's what you got to watch as a producer. Take advantage of the narrowing the basis. So over the next few weeks in here, extended rallies, I think you got to sort of sell ahead here, because once we get into early harvest, I have a feeling basis is going to be quite wide.
Anything to add on the livestock for the day?
Well, we're seeing the cattle resume a little strength in here on ideas. We can maybe see this cash market stay steady, firm in here. The June's been a discount, so we're sort of narrowing the spread between the cash and the board here. Hogs, we ran into a round of speculative selling on ideas that maybe the cash hog market could stabilize and trend maybe 50 cents lower as we go into midweek.
And the outside markets, one final word from them. They were awfully active today.
Yeah, we're seeing some huge movement out in the outside markets. Volatility's up. Margin requirements continue to go up as the market becomes more volatile here. I suggest that if you're going to try to trade the outside markets, lean towards the option side of it, because being the futures, man, it's going to be awful volatile.
You better be cash rich if you tried to do that, huh?
Okay. If you've got the move up, you're doing fairly good. But if you're coming back in, it's awful tough. They've raised the margin requirements on copper almost to 9,000 contracts, silver up over 7,000, gold almost $5,000 a contract.
Well, thanks much. We appreciate you being with us today.
Very good.
Kurt Kimball of Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Monday afternoons.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
At the bottom of the hour, a meteorologist from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago should join us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. AM 580's own Mike Searles' forecast for the two-state region tonight calls for, in the southern and western parts of Illinois, partly cloudy skies. Temperatures will be in the low 40s in the northern part of the state to the 50s in the south. It should be a little bit of shower, some drizzles around the two-state region, too. Tomorrow, he says, sunshine will become more common in western and southern Illinois. Temperatures will climb back into the mid and upper 60s across the eastern sections of the state and all of Indiana. You can look for cloudy skies tomorrow. Temperatures there in the upper 50s to the mid 60s. In just a moment, Dave Dickey, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILO radio stations, will join us to take a complete look at today's agricultural news. And then after that, I'll have an update on the bean leaf beetle with extension entomologist Kevin Steffi.
In agricultural news, the agriculture spending bill for fiscal year 2007 is scheduled to move to the House floor this week. Among other things, the measure trims $8 billion from the current spending level, with cuts scheduled for food stamps and conservation programs, both of which would be cut 7%. Overall, legislators will be looking at a bill that appropriates $93.6 billion and includes specific funding to combat mad cow disease and avian influenza. Over on the Senate side, the ag spending bill is still in committee. Japanese newspapers are reporting that Japan's government will demand that its own inspectors examine U.S. slaughterhouses as a precondition for reopening its border to U.S. beef imports. Japan will also seek the ability to conduct spot checks of U.S. beef facilities Washington is expected to accept both requests. Greg Dowd, chief economist for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, says the timing could be right for an announcement when Japan's prime minister visits America next month.
The prime minister of Japan is going to be over here in late June, and I think the whole objective here is to get this thing behind us. They've already been open once. They want to see the paperwork to make sure that they don't get three boxes of veal again that have got vertebrae in them or backbone, and I think we've got some things we can show them to make sure that that won't happen again. We'll be ready to go.
A team of U.S. experts are heading to Tokyo later this week. Meanwhile, this morning, Japan confirmed its 26th case of mad cow disease in a 5.5-year-old dairy cow. The Missouri General Assembly late last week passed a bill requiring all gasoline sold in the state to contain 10% ethanol when the price of ethanol is the same or lower than regular unleaded gasoline. Missouri GOP State Senator Jim Cawthorn says a sharp rise in gas prices over the last year gave the measure momentum in the Missouri legislature.
I think what really brought it to the head was when fuel prices spiked last year, and we saw a tremendously higher cost of energy in our state. Now, we can be proud that we have a renewable fuel standard in the state of Missouri that says we're going to use 10% ethanol in our gasoline products in the state of Missouri.
Missouri Governor Matt Blunt has indicated he will sign the legislation into law. And after a 10-year ban due to carnal bunt, Mexico will again accept wheat shipments from California. U.S. Ag Secretary Mike Johanns made the announcement Friday. According to USDA, Mexico is the third largest foreign market for U.S. wheat, setting record high sales of $459 million in 2004. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Well, up next, farmers have begun to make the connection between the bean leaf beetle, bean pod model virus, and green stem. But, as we'll report, it doesn't mean producers should ignore the thresholds used to treat for the insect. The connection between the bean leaf beetle, bean pod model virus, and green stem is not very clear. Each of these can cause serious problems in a soybean field on their own. It is thought that the beetle can carry the virus from one soybean plant to the other, and that the virus has an impact on how long the stem of the bean stays green after maturity. Green stems create problems at harvest. Extension entomologist Kevin Steffi from the University of Illinois says it would be best if farmers simply ignored these relationships when deciding whether or not to treat for the bean leaf beetle.
The bottom line here for soybean growers in Illinois is to stick to the thresholds based on leaf feeding and don't knee-jerk reaction when you see bean leaf beetles, because if there aren't very many of them present, they're not going to cause yield loss on their own, and the odds are pretty good they're not going to be transmitting the virus. That's the bottom line. And this is all sort of complex. Until we understand the relationship better, we're still going to fall back on the thresholds that I have suggested for leaf feeding.
Those thresholds are 12 beetles per foot of row on VE stage soybeans, those that have just emerged. On stage 2 soybeans, that number per foot of row jumps to 39 before an insecticide treatment would be recommended.
And it's really important in a year like 2006. I think the last time I looked, about 14% of the soybeans have been planted. Well, the earliest planted soybeans are going to be magnets to bean leaf beetles. So any fields that start emerging here very early in May need to be watched very carefully, because we could see a large number of bean leaf beetles. And even though I've discussed the virus, I don't want the virus to be the focus. The bean leaf beetles should be the focus, not the virus, at this point.
There is some interesting research happening at the University of Illinois related to green stem. Stay with me as we make the leap from the bean leaf beetle past the bean pod model virus and to green stem directly. U of I scientists over 3 recent years studied green stem in soybean cultivars. They've determined the amount of green stem is consistent year to year in those varieties subject to high or moderate levels of the disorder. They haven't yet been able to decipher whether or not that trait is inheritable and therefore could be manipulated by soybean breeders. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Joining us now for a look at the cash grain market is Greg Johnson of the Andersons here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Greg.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It was good to talk with Craig Parr on Commodity Week over the weekend. Talked a lot about the cash basis. Wanted to get your view of cash basis today and in 07 and 08.
Well, the market in 06 is acting just like you would think. We've got plenty of corn. The government report on Friday said we're not going to run out of corn in 06, but if we keep using more than what we produce somewhere down the line, 07, 08, things are going to get tight. And then the basis levels probably would start narrowing. But right now, the government says there's still 2.2, 2.3 billion bushels of corn. Even though exports have picked up the last 6 or 7 weeks, we still aren't in any jeopardy of running out of corn. And so spreads are wide, basis levels are weak. And when the futures markets goes up because funds or whoever are buying, that just gives farmers an even more incentive to sell corn on a flat price rally. And so farmers selling and just a general comfort with the stocks level for the 06 crop is keeping basis levels wide in the 06. Now, that very well could change in 07 and 08, but we're not there yet.
What are you normally at this time of year under the Dease, I suppose, or the harvest month, whichever, whatever you're basing that off at this time? I don't know whether it's September or the Dease.
December right now, and we're 24 under the December. Last year, of course, during the throes of Katrina, it got as wide as 35 under, but typically 16 to 20 unders. Kind of typical, and here we are at 24 under, so basis is wider than what I would say is normal.
And expectations from the Andersons are for that to continue to stay wide as long as we have a normal crop year, or possibly to widen out even going into harvest?
Yeah, exactly. It'll depend, number one, on the June 30th acreage report, but if we planted a little bit more corn and the crop still looks good, we're not going to run out of corn this year with the 2.2 left over from last year. If we grow a 10.5 billion bushel crop this year, that should be sufficient to get us through and keep the spreads from narrowing up very much.
So a complex any different?
It's basically the same thing. The soy diesel, the biodiesel is going to get ramped up here in a few years. But again, until that happens, the government's projecting 500 plus million bushels carry out this year, 600 million bushel plus next year. Both of those are record amounts. And so nobody seems to be panicking yet.
And farmers in the 5-6 county area that you talk to primarily feeling comfortable with where they are on corn planting yet?
Yes, corn planting is basically done. It'll be in the 90-some percent statewide, I would think, when the numbers come out today. Bean numbers are going to be a little bit behind normal, but nobody's too concerned about that yet.
And your bids for the day are?
Cash corn, 243. New corn, 260. Cash beans, 586. New beans, 602. Cash wheat, 369. New wheat, 379. And I guess we should talk about 07 and 08 corn. 07 corn, 295 right out of the field. And 08 corn, 309 right out of the field.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thanks, Todd.
Thanks much. And Greg Johnson is with the Anderson. Joined us here on the closing market report that happens on Monday afternoons. In about 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast with the folks from the Chicago office of Chesapeake Energy. Up next, your local and regional newscast from the AM 580 staff. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. This is WILL.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Urbana Mayor Laurel Pressing released a $41 million budget plan for the city today, up about $3 million from the current budget. The Urbana budget proposal keeps the city property tax at its current level, with more revenue expected from the new Walmart and other improvements. The proposal would add 0.25% to the city's non-food sales tax, making it equal to Champaign's. Urbana City Council budget hearings begin next week. A defense attorney says federal prosecutors are launching what he calls a very, very odd and stupid corruption case designed to embarrass Chicago Mayor Richard Daley. Attorney Thomas Anthony Durkin made those comments today as opening statements got underway in the hiring fraud trial of four former city officials. The four are charged with faking job interview scores and hiding lists of patronage employees and their sponsors. Prosecutors contend the men were trying to cover up political patronage and city hiring in defiance of a court order. Repair work is continuing on a Northern Illinois train line where an Amtrak train car derailed over the weekend. Investigators are trying to figure out what caused the problem, which involved a train carrying 191 people and occurred in the DeKalb County town of Sominok. Indiana's Attorney General is asking that state's Supreme Court to resolve questions about a law that some judges say allows same-sex couples to jointly adopt children. Attorney General Steve Carter wants the High Court to void a ruling allowing unmarried couples in Indiana to jointly adopt a child. Lawyers seeking to stop the Indiana toll road from being leased to private investors say the law allowing it is unconstitutional. Indiana State Representative Wynn Moses testified in a lawsuit in South Bend today that the bill contained provisions that amount to illegal special legislation. At this morning's annual memorial ceremony for Champaign police killed in the line of duty, Chief R.T. Finney asked for prayers for the family of a state police officer who died in a car crash last week. State Police Sergeant Rodney Miller was killed in an accident in Champaign County. Today's memorial service remembered Champaign police officers Thomas Dodsworth and Robert Tatman. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincolnland Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at lincolnlandagrienergy.com.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Agricultural Information Advantage. This is WILL Urbana. It's a broadcasting service of the College of Communications here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. We're joined now by meteorologist Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago. He's on the line to talk about the agricultural weather forecast for this Monday afternoon. Good afternoon to you, Mark.
Good afternoon, good afternoon there, Todd.
It is a good afternoon. Hey, 62 degrees, a little gray, kind of cloudy, bit of rain around. What's the forecast look like for the two-state region?
Well, we're going to continue to see this pattern here that's being dominated by a closed upper-level low-pressure system. It's going to be hanging around still for the balance of this week, and as a result, still unseasonably cool, generally cloudy conditions with periodic rain activity, mainly in the light form, nothing terribly heavy, but that's going to be the case here, especially across Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio, coming up from now basically through Friday.
And then if you take a little further outlook, what do we see for the next 10 to 12 days?
Well, Todd, it does look like as we go into next week, that closed upper-level low is going to get kicked out of the picture, and as a result, ridging of high pressure, which actually is currently out over the Rocky Mountains, will be progressing eastward into the plains, and as a result of that movement, the Midwest is going to warm up here, and actually a more typical summer pattern is going to move in as we go into next week with above-normal temperatures, generally below normal precip, which should be very beneficial here for soybean planting.
Any problems that we might need to make note of around the globe? And you might start maybe with the Southwest and tell us how that's come along in recent weeks as the rain has fallen.
Yeah, well, across the hard red winter wheat belt of the plains, you're pretty much your crop has been made there across much of Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas. However, we still have some developing wheat across Nebraska, some areas in northern Kansas, and on into eastern Colorado. And certainly, you know, we've had some improvement here with the rains of late. But however, we are watching as temperatures heat up next week. The western plains looks to be turning very hot as we go into next week. And so for some of the heading wheat there in places like such as Nebraska, Colorado, certainly some yield potential could get cut across that area. Another area that we're watching is also having wheat impacts, and that's actually down south across South America, particularly in Argentina. They're going to be planting their winter wheat crop over the next few weeks here, and southern portion of Argentina has begun to dry out, and as a result, that area does need some rain for to at least get planting to start off in a timely fashion. And it just doesn't look like over the next week to 10 days there's going to be much precip down there. So that's something to kind of keep on the radar screen here as we go through the rest of May.
Maybe since we're on wheat, why don't you check in on the Ukraine for us as well?
Yeah, across that area, they've had very favorable growing conditions here this spring with adequate rainfall. and variable temperatures, although it was on the cool side back in April, but has since that area has warmed up in May. And overall, yeah, at this time, you're likely going through a yield-sensitive heading stage across that area, and we do see more rainfall across that area as much of Europe is in an active pattern with slightly above normal temperatures, and thus that should keep growing conditions across the Ukraine, as well as much of Eastern Europe and Russia in good shape.
And round us out with the corn and soybean growing areas of China.
Yeah, across that area, we see steady planting coming up over the next week to 10 days, and overall, there's a good soil moisture base here, especially because of the wetness that they saw back in April. So it looks like they're starting off their new growing season in very good shape across China.
We appreciate it much, Mark.
You're very welcome, Todd.
Mark Russo is with Chesapeake Energy out of Chicago, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens on Monday afternoons. And that is today's Closing Market Report. Be sure to visit our website if you'd like to catch up on the futures segments, the weather segments, the pre-opening or the opening market reports or commodity week. They're all there. You can sign up for our newsletter, and you can pick these programs up as podcast. Well, it's all explained right there at WILLAG.org. Have a good afternoon. I'll be back in just a moment for the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Todd Gleason.